right in. I didn't even give you any preamble. Just hit record. That's
here we
how
are.
That's how we're starting. Episode 49, I believe. Oh my goodness. I'm about 3 feet from the screen and I can't read the number up top. And now I'm really worried that I'm getting old. My vision's failing.
We're all getting older every single day.
Yeah. Well, that's a good way to start this episode. It's going to be that. We're excited. And we have the biggest topic we've ever had before.
We do.
Which is roughly no topic. Right? Much more of, I think we just want to, you use like synthesize, I'll use
or,
reflect.
Yeah,
on having the privilege of Eric and Ron joining us for, I think, 5 episodes.
Yeah.
What a time.
My brain is very full from information that I learned from them. I tried to listen to all of it again before we recorded this, and I couldn't even absorb all of the information.
My heart is very full from them joining us. That's where I thought you were going to go with that.
It was objectively lovely to have them.
It was great to have them.
That's, I don't know. What, do you have a big takeaway, like, or a series of things or thoughts? Like, what's your, I don't know. How did your brain start to synthesize some of what we heard or learned? Or I can just answer that myself if you don't want to.
No. Sure, put me on the spot. Even though you said you were going to take care of all this, it's fine. So there are a couple moments where the behind the scenes, BTS, was that we did, I don't know, probably a total of 90 minutes or so of just prep with the four of us, making sure we knew what we want to talk about, just have a general direction, because there was so much information if we just started recording.
Right. We might not be able to make it a cohesive narrative that people could follow. So we were trying to at least know directionally where we were going.
And so in some of those conversations, Eric would say something or Ron would say something and I'd be writing it down as fast as I could. I'd be like, stop. Save it.
And also, why didn't we record that, right?
Save it. And then we started just recording everything.
Yeah.
And that was a lot of fun. But it was a great couple episodes. There was one thing that since Eric said it, has stuck out in my mind, which was, and I'm sure we're going to talk about this in detail, but the idea of you have to give a new metric credibility at the highest levels.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember him saying that and me thinking like, I'm an idiot. That's so obvious, but so well
I remember
defined.
Yeah.
And I think I wrote it down and circled it and starred it as just, it's almost like when you talk about this subject enough, and we spend a lot of time, and this is becoming more and more, I think, common practice is the focus on SIF and SIFP, but usually it's done with TRIR still being the top metric. And then, we also focus on these other things. Having Eric describe what it was like to say, yes, we know we're still going to track TRIR, but we're going to really, really focus and talk about every time we're together is SIF and SIF prevention.
Mm-hmm.
And the way he described giving it credibility and having to give it credibility and really, and we'll talk about this also, having beliefs conversations as to why. I mean, it stuck with me in a way that hearing the CEO talk about it, I was like, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Look at you using all this terminology as though you know the safety world. How do you feel?
You should just see my notes. It's like, use TRIR. And then
just
like,
circles over and over again.
This means that. No, I've been around this 3 years. I think it's been enough to absorb some of it. I got it. I figured it out. I figured out the couple of letters mean some things into some people. But it was great. It was such a, I loved that part. And I think for me, it actually probably filled in a gap. It's so important.
Right.
But we see it as so important. Why don't others see it as so important? Or they see it as important, but not as important as we do. And hearing Eric really challenge how you go from the one side of this group to the other was very helpful. Very helpful.
Yeah, I think the conversation put words to, for me at least, it put words to the fact that in order to implement these concepts well, there's a lot of shifts that have to happen at multiple levels in an organization. And based on just the nature of who you and I often speak to, we tend to only focus on parts of those shifts in, I don't know, 80% of the conversations we have. And I'll back up and explain what I mean by these shifts.
That to me was so confusing. Like, we tend to focus on 80% of the shift. Yes.
Yeah.
I think you're right. But if you could, you know, indulge everyone else.
Maybe expand on it a bit. I think towards the beginning or towards the end of the last episode, I was talking about the fact that Era Energy did a really good job looking at two different places of where this hop concept lives. And a lot of organizations seem to only get one of the two pieces of the puzzle. And I will reiterate what they are. The first piece of the puzzle is what Eric spoke to for a significant amount of the first few episodes. And it was the belief system shift that he had to make himself and then help communicate to everyone in the organization and help bring credibility to the thought process to the board through this metric change. And that belief system shift, he described very eloquently, and I'll do my best to summarize it. But the shift is the recognition of imperfection in people, in process, in equipment. And once we recognize that imperfection, then the idea of zero doesn't feel attainable. And because it doesn't feel attainable, then how you would focus your resourcing starts to change, because you no longer are focusing resourcing at perhaps the most frequent event that's happening. Like I think the example he used was slips, trips, and falls. But you are recognizing that the imperfection means there will be accidents. And the thing that we can control then is the consequence of those accidents or those events.
Which I'm going to quote Bob Edwards here.
Please.
Because one thing that's seared in my brain, I mean, I love Bob. And I have a lot of memories with him. But the one is him just always repeating after he goes to this point, it's not if, but when.
Yep.
And he keeps repeating that, because if you start to realize that if we admit humans are fallible, which last time I checked,
it's still
some
true.
More than others, but everyone is.
Still true.
Then it's the idea of, okay.
Yeah.
So then it's not if it's
but when. Yeah. And I think that thought process had been introduced to both he and I by Todd Conklin, like the first time that he came into one of our sites. And it's actually hard to wrap your mind around, because it is vastly different than at least the way that we were taught in the safety space of how to think about accidents. So that is a fundamental shift in thought. It's not if, but when. And when that happens at a senior leader level, then there is a desire to change where people are focusing their attention and therefore their resourcing. People meaning the other leadership teams. Because the it's not if, but when, the when aspect of it requires us to look at barrier health and system health and all of those resourcing decisions. They're real tangible things that need to be maintained, need to be understood. And the decisions about whether or not we're going to put money and time into that come from the leadership team, right? So shifting the focus. That is one shift that some organizations do quite well. And then the other part is what Ron spoke to quite a bit. And Ron spoke to the idea of operational learning and understanding when you are witnessing something like barriers not being healthy in the field, that there is something to learn. The people who are close to the work can teach you about it. And that the context of what's going on is actually going to lead you to the problem statements of what you need to change. And it's not just as simple as a person isn't following a rule or a practice or a barrier because they don't want to. That's an oversimplification of what's happening. Some organizations seem to grab on to that piece of the puzzle. So that's another shift in thought, right? That's that shift in thought around Taylorism, that shift in thought around black line, blue line. And depending upon what part of the organization you're speaking to, they tend to have different meanings, right? We'll call it shift one, which was Eric's shift, and shift two, which was Ron's shift. If you are not at Eric's level, it is really hard to know how you're going to affect where people are putting their time and resourcing, because you don't have access to, for example, changing a metric or convincing a board that this is a new credible metric to look at. So that desire to change the way that we're looking at managing safety, for example, is in your sphere of concern, but feels very much outside your sphere of control and oftentimes outside of your sphere of influence. And so if that is the prerequisite to start implementation of HOP, there'd be very few organizations that would be able to actually make any progress, because that means that the pathway to make progress has to start at the top and can only be successful once we've changed a metric that is directing people's attention on something.
We have a sales name.
Yeah.
Called the ideal customer profile. Which, if the ideal customer profile was CEOs at large companies, the HOP would have a very small window to get in anywhere.
Yeah.
If that was the prerequisite,
yeah,
it'd be very small.
Yeah.
And we know it's not true.
Correct. There's a lot of organizations that they don't have senior leadership buy-in, and yet they've been able to make progress. And so the rest of the organization, I feel like myself included, when I was within the space in GE, we're following into shift two, right? So we can't change the metrics that we are subject to, but we can change the amount of time and energy each of us are individually willing to put into learning context from the end user. And we can change how much information we are able to bring to the people around us. Like, do we get better at storytelling? Do we get better at bringing that contextual information to others so that great leaders can make great decisions with great information? If we make that personal shift, and enough people make that personal shift, then it starts to become an organizational shift, which then we've seen over and over again, ultimately influences senior leaders enough to want to have a conversation, which then you might be able to have a beliefs discussion with someone like a CEO to have them make shift one. But what I learned is that both of them seem incredibly necessary in order to have a long-term change in this space. And that when you do have both, it appears that the metric change is quite quick.
Sure. I mean, yes.
From this one particular case, right? Because they are focused on the thing that they are measuring, and the thing that they are measuring is directly aligned with this belief shift at the senior leader level.
And I think length of time for change is relative.
Sure.
Because if you're, let's just say, a mid-manager, never seen HOP before, but there has been sort of grassroots movements that eventually make their way to a CEO, and the CEO comes forward and says, you know what? I challenged myself. I believe this is the right way to go. Let's go this way. The middle manager may have no idea what's happening. They've never heard HOP, but they're being told change now. Whereas if you were a part of that grassroots, you were the one that were trying something new, it could be years.
Mm-hmm.
So it really depends kind of
where you're sitting in the organization.
I mean, there's a lot of different dependencies on that.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it is interesting to see this from the various perspectives of how the change looks within an organization, because to your point, you know, if you look at folks that are in organizations right now that haven't gotten to the place of influencing a senior leader yet, for them, this feels like an eternity, right? Because they are swimming upstream. The things that they think are important to learn about are not, they have to actually prove it every conversation, right? It's not being requested. They are trying to influence that it's important every conversation. And it's exhausting, I'm sure. I know it's exhausting. People tell us it's exhausting. I've experienced it being exhausting. And then if you're at the senior leader level, because of the decision rights that you have, kind of the first time that you've decided that this is the right thing to do, you have the authority to make fairly large change in an organization fairly quickly. And so from a senior leader's perspective, it can feel quite fast, the way that the change is made.
Yeah, I think it's almost like for anyone, it may take a long time to get there, and almost like a light bulb goes off.
Yeah.
Right. And Eric mentioned this a couple times, this beliefs conversation that you also have to have with yourself. Because if you fundamentally sit down and say, yeah, I guess this could be good for us, but I don't really know. and then you start getting challenged on it, are you really going to push back? Or are you going to just say, all right, you know what? Maybe I'll just go back to what I was doing. But if you change your beliefs, if you challenge yourself to that level, that gives you the resilience to go through and might take weeks, months, years to hopefully see change. But if you don't believe in it, it's really hard to continue to push and fight when the rest of the organization might not see it that way.
Yeah. I mean, especially if you're not at, you know, a senior leader level, right? Because your job feels quite dependent upon whether your boss or your boss's boss or your boss's boss's boss thinks that you're focused on the right things. And if what you're focused on is vastly different from what they're telling you to focus on, it can feel pretty job threatening pretty quickly. Yeah. So something about the conversation kind of helped me maybe separate out those concepts in my mind in a useful way of knowing that both of them need to exist, but then also having maybe a clearer picture as to why sometimes they feel so separate. And then if I think back to the organizations that have been using these concepts, I mentioned that it seems that there is one or the other that seems to be embraced.
Either the Eric side or the Ron side.
And when I think back to how the organization was introduced to the concepts, it really is dependent at what level in the organization it was introduced to. Meaning, if somebody within a C-suite team was the first person to hear the concepts, there tends to be a very strong focus on barrier health and not a strong focus on operational learning. And so you tend to have sort of the old playbook used when barrier health is, you find a deficiency in it. When there's been a lot of time where the introduction of the concepts were at, you know, mid-management level, there's a whole lot of emphasis on operational learning and recognizing operator struggle without a lot of ability to do much with the learnings, right? With kind of feeling you're stuck at learning and you don't have a direction of where and when you're going to have resources freed up to do something with the learning. And the thing that seems incredibly helpful about the implementation efforts that Eric and Ron went through is they happened kind of at the same time. I know that Ron was introduced to the concepts from Eric, who is introduced to them separately from a different organization, right? And so they kind of came together with the thought process at a similar time in the organization. And I don't know if that's recreatable for many, many people.
I think it
certainly seemed helpful.
For me, it's impressive that it took you 18 minutes to get to the point. Which I don't know if that's good or bad for you. I'd have to look back at my notes, but you know, summarizing it as, hey, if you're at that senior level, it's very common to lean into barrier health as your main takeaway, maybe one of your main takeaways from learning about HOP. Whereas if you're on maybe more of that mid-level, your focus is going to be more on operational learning to gather the information about what it's like to actually do the job. Black line, blue line. Good point. Way to get there. I mean, you didn't tell me that was the point you were going to make before we started. I'm just happy I got to see it. I got to see the plane land.
Thanks. Yeah. So that's my useless rambling for, I guess, this episode. I mean, does that bring meaning in any way to anything in your mind?
It does. Yeah. No, it really does. I think having that sort of defined, I'm trying to, it applies meaning to Matt in what we do and how I think about when we are working with organizations, what we would say, what we would do, that actually makes a lot of sense to me. So I'm putting myself in the shoes of a listener who 49 episodes in probably knows HOP. Maybe they are struggling to make a change, but it might give them, we talk about common language a lot. Mm-hmm. It might give them a little bit of a glimpse into what common language to use and focus on when you're talking at different levels.
Yeah.
So yes.
And one of the things that Eric did mention, I think at the end of the last episode, where there's value. And if I think back to my own world, I think we kind of accidentally did this is that he said that there has to be an impetus for change. And sometimes that comes from a very serious event that happens. And actually, in speaking with Todd Conklin, one of the most common reasons that he is asked to go to an organization is because there has been something horrific that's occurred. In absence of that, because there's a lot of organizations that, you know, the individuals who see the value in HOP, they don't want to wait for something terrible to happen. They want to be able to help now. One of the things that he mentioned was being able to bring narrative or stories or another reason for change based on what's actually happening in the field today. And I think that those of us that are in the space of not being in the C-suite, that is the most powerful thing that we can be doing, understanding these concepts enough and then bringing stories to people so that they can see that there is a gap between a black and a blue line, that there is brittleness. And I think specifically he said a senior leader has to understand and know stories of and have real tangible information of brittleness in the system in order to recognize that maybe we need to change where we're focusing. And so being able to learn about where that is and then provide that information in some meaningful way to the folks at a senior level. I think we accidentally did that without a plan to do it, but accidentally did that within my organization many times, just talking about incident investigations and changing our thought process around that because we talked about them differently. We were bringing system level brittleness up a lot in discussion.
Let me add, because you're talking about bringing it to a senior level, and we had asked Eric that question. And he said, yeah, the beliefs conversation is important. But he said specifically that making this change doesn't blow everything up.
Mm.
And that struck me as super profound, because I think you hear change and you think about, if you're at a senior level, you're like, all these moving parts that take just to get us to where we are, and now you're telling me you want to change? That sounds like something we just can't do. We have too many embedded systems, too many things that are fixed. That doesn't sound realistic. So when you are bringing it, and Eric said that it doesn't blow everything up and that you have a good idea for a first few steps you can try.
Yeah.
And that's huge. I mean, you're taking the ownership of this change maybe off of that senior person and saying, hey, I think we can actually try it a few ways like this. And then let's see what we think. And that's first few steps.
Yeah.
Crawl, walk, run. Right?
I generally.
Sprint.
Sprint. And maybe that's what we can talk about next episode. Meaning we talk a lot about what you can do kind of at site level, service level, management. And then if you happen to be on the C-suite, right, what influence you have, we've talked about that. But if you're a person that can influence the C-suite, right, you're maybe a regional leader or a business leader, and you are going to suggest a first few steps, what do those look like? What have organizations done? What can those first few steps look like where you have a little bit more influence to make a plan that seems presentable to somebody in the C-suite? We'll go from there.
I like it.
All right.
I like it. All right. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk again soon.